Hello, welcome to Around the Table. I'm David Friary, and on this series of programmes we're going to be talking about Easter, about the meaning of Easter and its relevance today. Well, let's meet the panel gathered around the table.
Hi there, my name's Rob Childs. I'm pastor of Droylsden Independent Church on the east side of Manchester.
Hi, I'm Trevor Park. I'm a lay reader at St Michael's Church in Chester.
Hello, and I'm Stephen Dunning, and I'm a pastor in North East Wales.
So Judas betrays Jesus. He kisses Jesus, says, "This is the man." The crowd come along, led by the religious leaders. They take Jesus. Where do they take him to? This is the Thursday night of the story, isn't it?
Yes, well, first of all, he's tried before the religious authorities. There's several stages to that trial, but in effect, it's the Sanhedrin, the religious authorities, that investigate him first, and there it's a charge of blasphemy. They wouldn't accept that he was the Son of God.
So in their view, even before the trial, Jesus was guilty anyway. It was like a kangaroo court sort of
thing.
Well,
yeah. It smacks of that from the beginning, doesn't it? What kind of court meets in the middle of the night?
Yeah.
They had to go and wake Pilate up, didn't they?
It was against the Jewish law for court to sit at night.
I believe so, yes. Yeah. And so it's completely outside the realms of everything that is right and proper. And yet they do this because it's an opportune moment for them to do it. And they want to get rid of this man by any means.
So they say he's guilty. Why don't they just put him to death there and then?
Because they can't do it.
Why not?
Because of the Roman masters.
Okay.
That is something that lies within the remit of the Roman authorities.
So they've got to get Rome on side, in a sense. The Roman governor on side,
yeah.
Hence they take Jesus to Pontius Pilate.
So now he's being tried in front of the secular authorities. Mm. He appears before Pilate, he has a brief appearance before Herod as well. These are the secular authorities. But what's interesting now is that the charge against him is no longer blasphemy, it's treason. Mm. In that he's claiming to be a king, and the way the authorities are putting it, he's trying to subvert Caesar's authority.
Mm. And what was Pontius Pilate, the governor's, verdict on Jesus?
Well, he was innocent.
Yeah.
You know, and he goes through this washing his hands. I wash my hands of this man's blood.
Hence the expression, I wash my hands of it.
I wash my hands of it, yeah, exactly.
But it was politically expedient for him to hand him over.
I mean, he was, in a sense, between a rock and a hard place. He knew that this guy was innocent, but he had this baying crowd outside. And if riots broke out and all sorts of trouble, he wouldn't look good in the eyes of his Roman masters. So
his head's on the chopping block, really, isn't it?
Pretty much so, yeah, pretty much so.
One of the things in the story is that Pilate wanted to release a prisoner. It was customary at that time of year, and so he suggests releasing Jesus, but in the end it is Barabbas who is released. And he was a notorious, I think we'd call him a terrorist today. I don't think when Jesus was crucified they had to go rushing around looking for a third cross, because they hadn't got one in the stores. He was crucified on the very cross that Barabbas would have been crucified on. Barabbas goes free and Jesus dies. That's an illustration, isn't it, of what the gospel is, that we get to live because Jesus dies.
It's grace.
Hmm.
So now Jesus is being found guilty. by the Jewish authorities. The Romans have acquiesced in that and said, yes, you take him, we'll kill him for you. And so Jesus now goes to his execution.
Just before he's taken away, though, he's physically mistreated. He's beaten, he's mocked, he's hit in the face, and of course that crown of thorns that was put on his brow, and that was no gentle laurel leaf. That was a very painful.
And then they hit him on the head as well, didn't they?
Yeah,
just following on from what Stephen said, because that beating that he undertook before being led to Calvary, that beating that the Romans meted out to people that were going to be crucified, that beating was severe.
Often people would die.
Exactly.
Before getting to the cross.
It was often the case that they didn't actually get to be crucified. The beating was so severe, they died. So we can't underestimate just how severe that was.
But Jesus had to actually die on the cross, because all that was part of the Old Testament prophecy, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was going to be exact, and there were so many prophecies.
The man on the tree.
Those days.
Jesus collapses, doesn't he, on the way to the cross as he's carrying the cross.
It has to be handed over, doesn't it, to somebody else.
He's so physically affected by what's happened to him that he can't do it.
So eventually Jesus gets to the top of Golgotha, of Mount Calvary, and there they nail him to the cross. They wouldn't have treated him gently, they'd have just dragged him around. And you know, this is the time that sometimes you read this and you remember, this is God. This is God himself, isn't it? Who's dying, and not just in a gentle way. He's taking our punishments upon himself.
It's interesting, isn't it, though, that the Bible, the actual act of the crucifixion, it's sort of passed over in the sense that it's a little phrase, and they crucified him. It doesn't go into the sort of detail that a modern newspaper would go into, or a television programme would go into.
It was the Passion film, that was it.
The film, The Passion. It doesn't go into that. It leaves that to the imagination. Partly because the original readers would have been fully aware of what crucifixion meant. But partly, I think, to direct our attention somewhat away from the physical suffering to other things that are going on. That he's bearing the wrath of God. There's a spiritual suffering, there's a mental suffering. And the suffering in his soul as well as in his body. And I think that's more important, possibly, could you put it like that?
I think so, because many, many people suffered the ignominy and the agony of crucifixion.
The Jesus two men on not, either side.
Jesus was not the first, and he was not the last. And his physical suffering, who's to say whether it was greater or less than anybody else who suffered that same end? But the difference is what God did. The difference is that Jesus' death was not simply to pay for his crimes, because he had no crimes to pay for. He had no sin to pay for. His death was to pay for the sins of the world.
He himself bore our sins in his body on the tree, on the cross of Peter.
And it's just so nice that as he's dying on the cross, one of the thieves that were crucified, there were two thieves crucified, one on each side. One of them turns to Jesus and says, remember me when you come into your kingdom. You know, at the very moment of the crucifixion, somebody is being saved and forgiven. It's lovely, isn't it?
He's saved despite all he's done in life. He's not had a chance to change his life, to live a good life, because he's right at the very end there.
And he's not going to go off and get baptized or anything like that.
But at that moment, he trusts Jesus and says, Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus said, this very day you'll be with me in paradise.
He's not had a chance to get to know Jesus. He's not had a chance to learn about the Old Testament prophecy, and yet he is saved.
He saw something in Jesus.
I mean, he probably knew who Jesus was. Maybe he knew. If he'd been in Jerusalem that week, he would have surely have known who Jesus was.
Might have even shared a cell with him.
Possibly,
Just going back to the suffering of Jesus on the cross, the physical suffering would have been immense. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But I'd suggest that possibly the greatest suffering that he faced was that as he was dying and taking on the sin of the world, God had to turn his back on him. And hence the words, you know, my God, why have you forsaken me? And that would have been possibly
the hardest
I was going to say unpleasant, that waters it down too much, the most drastic of the agony that he faced whilst he was on the cross.
There were several sayings Jesus made, seven sayings from the cross, wasn't there? We won't go through each one of them, but there's that one at the end, isn't there, when he cries out, it is finished. Now at that point, so what are people thinking? So he's come to try and show us how to live, he's trying to be a Messiah, he's trying to be a saviour, and he now realises, okay, it's finished, it's all over, I've failed.
No. It means it's all over, I've done it.
Tetelestai is the Greek word. It's one word in the Greek. Done. It's a transactional term, isn't it? It means paid in full. It's completed. Not that this is the end, it's not been done, it's not been achieved, but rather this is complete. It's the kind of thing you'd stamp on an invoice.
But if you want an illustration of that, for some years I used to work in Argos, and when we gave the people whatever it was they bought. We took their receipt and we stamped it. And it would have been that word that we would have used had we been doing it in Greek.
There is a sense in which Jesus says it is finished. You can look at it from the point of view, I've crossed the finish line, you've yet to cross it. You know, he's the trailblazer.
Yeah.
He's won the race, if you like.
And he's come alive again. But we'll come to that. Let's just talk about Jesus taken down from the cross. And he gets laid in the tomb. So how come his body was taken down and laid in the tomb there and then?
Well, first of all, there's a sense of surprise, isn't there, that he died when he did. I think that comes over. Pilate is surprised when they tell him, when they come to collect Jesus' body, followers come to him, he's surprised that he's already dead and has to check with the guards, I think, doesn't he, that everything's been done properly, because usually people would stay alive in agony for a lot longer on the cross. And so once that confirmation has taken place, and these were professional people, their own lives and well-being were on the line, as the fact that this man has been killed, he's definitely dead, his side is pierced with a spear to ensure that, and the body is taken down and he's buried in the grave of Joseph of Arimathea, who is a well-to-do man in Jerusalem, who's been drawn to Jesus.
Wasn't there a thing about the body could not be hanging on a cross on the Sabbath day, and so they had to take
they wanted it taken down before the Passover. But I think it's worth just underlining that the evidence is clear from the account. Jesus really was dead.
Yes.
There were those these days who would try and suggest that somehow he managed to survive. But as Rob pointed out, the Romans were experts. They knew what they were doing. And they knew that he was dead before they allowed him to be taken and buried.
Because Pilate checked that with one of his own officers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The other one that's often thrown up is a case of mistaken identity, and it wasn't Jesus who was actually crucified. But we see throughout the account that that's not possible. Judas identifies him and they arrest him and take him away. When he's on the cross, his mother is there and he speaks to her. There's no doubt that this man who hung on the cross and died was Jesus of Nazareth, and he was really dead.
So we get to the end of this discussion programme, and we're going to leave it there with Jesus has now been placed in a tomb. The stone's been rolled in front of the tomb, and he's not going to stay there. But what happens next, we'll come to in our next programme.
Thank you for joining us today on Around the Table here on Flame CCR. Join us next time as David Friary and his guests Rob Childs, Stephen Dunning and Trevor Park continue their discussion on the meaning and relevance of Easter. If you would like a free booklet about Easter, please email flamecr@gmail.com requesting the Easter booklet and leaving us your name and address. Alternatively, phone our studios and leave your details. The number is 0151 643 1696. If you wish to discuss anything raised in this programme, please also contact David. Those contact details again. The email is flamecr@gmail.com and the telephone number is 0151 643 1696.